This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hi, I'm Philippa Tolley, and welcome to the Long Read from Stuff. This week's story is called The Mysterious Murder of David Robinson. It's written by senior reporter and Long Read host Michael Wright, who joins us now. Hi, Mike. So what is this story all about?
Well, it's about David Robinson's murder, but it's an interesting cold case that I covered a few years ago. David Robinson was a young guy, an itinerant guy from the North Island who was living rough on the west coast of the South Island in the mid-90s and turned up dead on a beach, a very remote beach on the west coast with a bullet hole between his eyes and very little evidence around about what happened to him. The case was covered at the time, but not in a lot of detail. It sort of faded from memory. Robinson was, he was a drifter. He didn't attract a lot of attention. And I kind of stumbled across the story 5 or 6 years ago and wrote an initial feature then. And my colleague Sam Sherwood and I teamed up to write this one, which is a follow based on some new developments in the case.
Thanks, Mike. Now, here is Michael Wright reading the story he wrote with Sam Sherwood, The Mysterious Murder of David Robinson.
In life, as in death, David Robinson was a mystery. Years before his body washed up on a West Coast beach, a bullet hole between the eyes and a slug lodged in the brain, he was anonymous, unknowable, an enigma. His parents knew one thing about him. From not long after the time he was born in Tokoroa in 1973, he was trouble. Mostly it was stealing, harmless stuff really, but it belied a bigger problem. We took him to the doctor, his mother, Joan Robinson, said. I don't think there was anything we didn't try to get him right. But you know what? He could be so lovable, absolutely lovable. He was like Jekyll and Hyde. Young David Robinson inhabited these two extremes. A sensitive kid who would talk and listen to his mum, who also snuck out of the house at night and was an incorrigible thief. He was very sly and stealthy, Joan said. Remember the old-fashioned doorstops? He used to take the cap off and hide money that he'd stolen. Who would think to do that? At 16, David left school, but wouldn't get a job. Or if he did, he just didn't show up. He ended up renting his uncle's batch at Tairua in the Coromandel, which came with the prospect of a place on a fishing boat. His parents were hopeful of a fresh start for their wayward son. The outdoors was the one thing he liked. He was a good hunter, like his father, and could survive in the bush with ease. John and Joan Robinson sent David money and food and visited him several times. But David squandered the job and fell in with a bad crowd in Tairua. There were drugs, a litter of pups that he hid from his uncle under the house, and, of course, stealing. Eventually, the local cop told David to leave town, even calling his parents to ask if they would take him back. We said no, Joan Robinson said. He's 18. He doesn't want to live with us. It isn't going to work. The Robinsons never saw their son again. 7 years later, on New Year's Eve, 1998, a detective walked up the driveway of their home in Rotorua. He asked me if we had a son called David John Robinson, and then asked his birth date, Joan said. Then he said that his body had been washed up on a beach outside of Ross. We couldn't believe it. We didn't even know where he was. Right from the start, the investigation into the death of David Robinson was hard work. When he was found, police didn't even know who he was, let alone how exactly he had died or why. The body was discovered by a four-wheel drive enthusiast driving on Kakapotahi Beach, just south of the town of Ross, on December 28, 1998. The remote stretch of coast, just north of a rocky outcrop known as Bald Head, is strewn with driftwood and, after a storm, dead seals. It's accessible only by crossing a lagoon or travelling up several kilometres of sand from the south. Police used trucks and quad bikes to get to the scene. David's body had clearly been on the beach for some time. The four-wheel drive enthusiast initially mistook it for another dead seal. He was wearing jeans, but was barefoot and bare-chested, identifiable only by the fingerprint of his right index finger and thumb, which led straight to his criminal record. David had been on the coast for a couple of years, living rough, travelling by foot at night, and generally keeping to himself, except for when he needed to steal food. He had last come to the attention of authorities a couple of months earlier, when he was arrested for stealing at Haast. After appearing in court in Greymouth, he skipped bail and disappeared. There was almost nothing else useful at the scene. The body was on the high tide line, and anything else David might have had with him had long washed away. He had likely been thrown onto Kakapotahi Beach by the waves, but again, police couldn't be sure from where. Having a crime scene is a prerequisite pretty much for being able to solve a crime of that nature, former Detective Sergeant Rob Nicol said. And we didn't have it. Nicol led the Greymouth CIB in 1998 and was the initial inquiry head. He quickly realised the West Coast lacked the manpower for such a complex investigation, and reinforcements were brought in from Nelson. Detective Senior Sergeant Wayne Stringer assumed command. Officers canvassed the area. Nicol is sure they knocked on every door in Ross, but turned up no meaningful leads. Some of David's belongings, a shoe, a ground sheet, were found further up Kakapotahi Beach, supporting the idea he had been in the water, and search teams found small campsites on the shore. David had likely been staying in the area before he died. Several suspects were identified and spoken to, but with each, police had one of two problems: a strong alibi or nothing to tie them to a murder. One of those suspects, who still lives in the area, told Stuff he was never informed he was a person of interest. He said he had been interviewed by police, but had an alibi for the time of the murder. Rumours on the coast often mention the man's name, but he suspected that was because he had a criminal record. "Everyone's got their own right to think," the man said. "But there's obviously no evidence behind the thought, because I wouldn't be probably sitting here. I would have been locked up, wouldn't I? It's a little town. Everyone knows everyone, mate." In fact, it was hard to link anyone to David in any capacity. Such was his reclusive nature, police had only a handful of sightings of him in the weeks before his death. David's distinctive appearance at least helped with confirmations. He was tall, about 6'5", with a shock of brown hair and a long, aquiline nose. But he wasn't drawing an unemployment benefit, had no bank account, and didn't appear on any CCTV camera footage. None of the electronic aids investigators usually turn to in order to track a murder victim were available. The usual tips came in, but they all came to nothing. "We did everything I think we could have done except identify the person responsible," Rob Nicol said. "There's probably only one person in the world that knows who did this, and he's not speaking."
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Detective Sergeant Brent Lyford took over the Robinson case in 2018. By then, it had sat near dormant for years. A review of the file, prompted by a Stuff request to see it in 2015, had unearthed some avenues of inquiry, but nothing came of them. The case featured on the TVNZ show Cold Case in 2019, where Lyford discussed two more long-standing suspects who, again, couldn't be tied to the murder. In July 2022, he reviewed the file once more and found something interesting. He declined to say what it was exactly, only that it was information that hasn't been explored as well as it could have been. This information pointed to a new person. The person was spoken to in the initial inquiry, Lyford said, but until now hadn't been considered a suspect. The oversight wasn't due to neglect, rather the fragmented nature of such a long-running case. We're talking about a file with about 1,000 documents, Lyford said. Because it's just been passed from person to person to person, there's not actually one person that knows that file and all of the intricacies. Lyford's team are now digitising the entire file before acting on the new lead. We will definitely be speaking to the new suspect at some stage, he said. The reviews have helped hone the police theory about what happened. Lyford is now sure David died on either December 17th or 18th, 1998. There were several sightings of him in the Kakapotahi area in the days prior, and a loud gunshot was heard in the settlement on the 18th. One resident, who said it was so close to their property that all the birds took flight, described it to investigators as a hell of a shot. This timing would fit with how and when the body was found on the beach. Police believe that after David was shot, he was thrown into a river, probably the Kakapotahi, at the bridge just before it merges with the Waitaha, then washed out to sea, a round, bold head on a northerly flow, and onto the beach. This wouldn't have taken long, one tide cycle at most, which might explain the relatively low damage on the body from sea lice, known to be particularly harsh in the Tasman Sea. This, in turn, meant David would have been on the beach for just over a week before being discovered, which matched the decomposition of his body. Then there were the injuries. David was shot between the eyes with a .22 caliber firearm. While the entry wound had no telltale signs of a shot from point-blank range, it's unlikely it could have been made from a distance. The pathologist also found a severe fracture in David's skull. While they couldn't be sure if it was sustained pre- or post-mortem, it would have been a debilitating injury, not something David could have carried for days or weeks before his death. It was more likely something incurred if his head had hit a rock when he was thrown off a bridge and into a river. All of that makes sense, but even with supporting evidence, Lyford stresses that it's just a theory, and it doesn't explain the biggest unknown in the whole case. Why would anyone want to kill David Robinson? Here, there is much less evidence, but investigators have a couple of plausible motives. Robinson was an itinerant with a long history of petty crime. He lived hand-to-mouth on the West Coast and was known to have broken into homes and batches to steal food. Could he have been surprised mid-burglary by someone with a gun? Possibly, but the execution style of the fatal shot suggests some premeditation. Lyford is also drawn to another theory, that the suspect was involved in the cannabis trade. The cannabis-growing conditions on the west coast of the South Island are as close to ideal as you'll find in New Zealand. Warm and wet, with a low population and thousands of hectares of secluded bush. Every spring, police note new arrivals in the area, especially those carrying too much potting mix to be whitebaiting. Seeds are planted in early spring and plants harvested in late summer, and in between, growers fiercely guard their plots. If David was caught in a cannabis plot, it's not the right time of year for them to be harvesting, Life had said. So it does put another angle on whether he was stealing seedlings. That's still a possibility. When David was in custody in Greymouth, he reportedly told his cellmates he planned to head back to Haast when he got out to harvest cannabis. Again, it was too early for harvesting, suggesting some bravado and naivete on David's part, but it showed he was interested in the trade, perhaps the sort of person who would stumble onto a plot and get into strife. But it still required uncommon callousness from someone to kill David as they did. "It's a pretty big step," Brent Lyford said, "to shoot someone in the head for stealing cannabis." Today, Kakapotahi Beach is more or less as it was in 1998. So is the tiny hamlet of the same name, which sits just south of Bald Head, by the mouth of the Waitaha River, close to where police believe David's body was likely disposed of. There is a clutch of houses and an area at the end of Beach Road designated for freedom camping. This was the spot police used to access the beach and drive up to the body scene back in 1998. Mark and Jill Walsh are the only locals remaining from that time. They enjoy floundering, whitebaiting, and fishing, surf casting off the beach. There are more visitors doing the same these days, they say, and fewer people growing weed close by. In the 90s, if you ventured into the swamps between the end of the road and the river mouth, it was easy to find plastic crates among the gorse, nurturing a handful of cannabis plants. "We used to get a lot of cars in the early hours of the morning," Jill Walsh said, "particularly on a moonlit night." Mark Walsh likes the police body disposal theory. He once lost a dinghy in the Waitaha, and it washed out to sea and around onto Kakapotahi Beach, about where David was found. "And a bridge is the most likely dump spot," he said. "It'd be too much work dragging a body to the river's edge somewhere else, and no one except a local would know where to go." Neither of the Walshes recalls seeing David before he died, but his murder was an enduring conversation topic with their neighbours until they all died or moved away and the case ran cold. "It's a real-life detective story," Jill Walsh said. "It's not simple, like Midsummer Murders that I watch."
Today on Usable, the clock is ticking for TikTok after the US government gave the social media giant a deadline to sell their US operations. But do they have the power to actually follow through? Plus, the property market is stagnating along with the rest of the economy. And you can't say we didn't warn you, Cicada-geddon is upon us in the United States and things are getting weird. For everything that's worth talking about, find and follow Newsable wherever you get your podcasts.
Joan Robinson now lives in Hokitika, about a half-hour drive north from where her son's body was found. She and her husband used to like tramping on a particular track down at Ross. "There's a zigzag walk there that's absolutely beautiful," Joan said. "We would go there often to remember David, John and I. There's an old hut there that's been preserved, and it's just a beautiful place, very remote. David would have loved it there, and we have absolutely no doubt he would have been up there." The longer David's murder has gone unsolved, the more Joan has done that sort of thinking on behalf of other people. "Davey would have come here." Lately, she has taken to entering the mind of her son's killer, or killers. Joan is adamant more than one person was involved. "I'm quite certain they would have been in relationships," she said. "Maybe married, had children, maybe even got grandchildren." When December comes around, do any of them ever think back to that time? To what they took part in that day or that night when David was murdered? Do Do these people feel love and pride in their children and grandchildren like we still felt for David, even as a troublesome kid? Do they go along to the school sports like we used to? Maybe rugby matches, netball games? And when Christmas and their kids' birthdays come around, do they think about Davy and us, what we were deprived of? John Robinson was diagnosed with dementia nearly a decade ago and moved into care in Christchurch in 2021. When he spoke to Stuff in 2016 and TVNZ in 2019, he was lucid and able to recount some memories of David. But he became inconsolable at any mention of his son, and by the time he entered care, he didn't know who David was. "It's a beggar," Joan said. "I always wanted it resolved before John lost his mind." She never got her wish. On September 3rd, 2022, John Robinson died of a heart attack. He was 75. Joan sometimes still thinks of her son's demise. She's struck by the fact that, tall as he was, David must have been on his knees for someone to shoot him between the eyes. "I believe Davy would have been begging for his life," she said. "And I have no doubt at all that his killer would have reveled in that, taken great pleasure at his distress." Justice needs to be done. They need to be held accountable for their actions. And I want that for David and for John and for myself. So that's what I'm hoping will come out of this. Maybe this time, coming from a mother's heart and being blunt and completely honest and open about how it is for us and how I have imagined the scenario to be David's final moments on this earth will help solve the case. That's how his ending was. Kneeling on the ground, begging for his life. And these big, brave people shot him. I don't know how they could live with their conscience. I really don't.
That was The Mysterious Murder of David Robinson on The Long Read from Stuff, written by Michael Wright and Sam Sherwood, produced by Jen Black. This episode was edited by Connor Scott. If you listen via our website, you can hear this story and more like it on the Long Read podcast, available on all the usual platforms. If you follow the podcast, you'll get the latest episode automatically. Thanks for listening. Ka kite anō.
This pod took time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.